This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of The Real Book of Real Estate. Real Experts, Real Stories, Real Life. By Robert T. Kiyosaki. Performed by Michael Naramore, Joyce Bean, and Mel Foster. This audiobook includes a PDF of many of the graphics, charts, and graphs that accompanied the print edition. If you have purchased an audio CD version, look for the PDF on a separate disc. It appears as an additional file if you have purchased an MP3 CD or MP3 download version. Acknowledgements. For years, I have been an advocate for financial education. While many other financial advisors are telling people what they should invest in, I have been telling people to invest in themselves, to invest in their own knowledge. That is what I have done, and it has made me rich. I have also been telling people to surround themselves with great teachers who are actively practicing what they preach. The creation of this book was made possible because of the people I consider my teachers. Each one has a lifetime of experience and a lifetime of knowledge, and each one knows the importance of continual learning. The contributors to this book generously gave of their time and their talent so that you could see the possibilities, avoid the pitfalls, and understand the methods of building wealth through real estate. They have recollected their great achievements, and they have revealed their painful failures. I thank them for their openness. The lessons we learn from our own mistakes and the mistakes of others are the most powerful. These people are not only my advisors, but they are also my friends. Together, we have been through the ups and downs of the real estate cycle, ridden each wave, and made money doing it. These are the friends I run my ideas and my deals by. And because they are friends, I know that they will give me their honest opinions. I thank them for that, too. Introduction. A note from Robert Kiyosaki. Why a book of real estate? There are four reasons why I think a book of real estate is important at this time. First, there will always be a real estate market. In a civilized world, a roof over your head is as essential as food, clothing, energy, and water. Real estate investors are essential to keeping this vital human need available at a reasonable price. In countries where investing in real estate is limited or excessively controlled by the government, such as it was in the former communist bloc countries, people suffer and real estate deteriorates. Second, there are many different ways a person can participate and prosper with real estate. For most people, their only real estate investment is where they live. Their home is their biggest investment. During the real estate boom from 2000 to 2007, many amateurs got involved with flipping houses, buying low and hoping to sell higher. As you know, many flippers flopped and lost everything. In true investor vocabulary, flipping is known as speculating or trading. Some people call it gambling. While flipping is one method of investing, there are many more sophisticated, less risky ways to do well with real estate. This book is filled with the knowledge and experiences of real estate investors, real estate professionals who invest rather than flip, speculate, trade, or gamble. Third, real estate gives you control over your investments, that is, if you have the skills. In the volatile times of early 2009, millions of people were losing trillions of dollars simply because they handed over control of their wealth to other people. Ever since the middle of 2008, the great Warren Buffett's fund, Berkshire Hathaway, has lost 40% of its value. Millions of people have lost their jobs, which means they had no control over their own employment either. The real estate professionals in this book have control over both their businesses and investments. They will share their good times and the bad times with you. They will share what they have learned while learning to control their investments and their financial destiny. The learning process is continual. And finally, here's my real reason for this book. I am sick and tired of financial experts giving advice on real estate, especially when they do not actually invest in real estate. After my book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, came out, I was on a television program with a financial author and television personality. At the time, in 1999, the stock market was red hot with the dot-com boom. This financial expert, who was a former stockbroker and financial planner, was singing the praises of stocks and mutual funds. After the stock market crashed in 2001, this man suddenly resurfaced with a new book on real estate, portraying himself as a real estate expert. His real estate advice was beyond bad. It was dangerous. Then the real estate market crashed and he dropped out of sight again. The last time I saw him, he had written a book on investing in solar energy and was claiming to be a green entrepreneur. If he were to write a book about what he really does, his new book would be about raising bulls and selling BS. There are other financial experts who know nothing about real estate, yet they speak badly about real estate and say it is risky. The only reason real estate is risky for them is because they know nothing about investing in it. Instead, they recommend saving money and investing in a well-diversified portfolio of mutual funds, investments which I believe are the riskiest investments in the world, especially in this market. Why do they recommend investing in savings and mutual funds? The answer is obvious. Many of these professionals are endorsed by banks, mutual fund companies, and the media. It's good business to plug your sponsors' businesses and products. Commissioning this book gives the public its first chance to learn from real estate investors, friends, and advisors, people who have been through the ups and the downs and who walk their talk. This book gives them the opportunity to share the spotlight with many media financial experts and speak the truth. These real estate experts are true pros, and you're about to move beyond the media hype. I hope you are ready. The Real Book of Real Estate is the real deal. Part 1. The Business of Real Estate. 1. Tom Wheelwright. The Business of Real Estate. Tom Wheelwright is a rare combination of CPA, real estate investor, and teacher. He has the ability to take the complex and often boring subject of tax and tax law and make it into something that's simple enough for a person like me to understand. Tom understands the tax code. He actually enjoys reading the tax code, and because he is such a student of it, he understands this lengthy document better than anyone I know. Most CPAs focus on a very small part of the tax code. They focus on the part that lets you and most Americans defer taxes until retirement, the code relating to IRAs, 401ks, and other so-called retirement plans. Tom also pays close attention to the other, much lengthier part of the code that shows you how to reduce or eliminate your taxes permanently. The difference between Tom and other CPAs is that Tom understands the purpose of the tax code. It's not just a set of rules. It's a document that, when followed, is designed to reward certain behaviors through lowering or eliminating taxes. Does your CPA see the tax code this way? I consider Tom to be a very moral and ethical man. He is very religious, raised in the Mormon faith. While I am not Mormon, I do share many of the values of the Mormon religion. Values such as tithing, giving at least 10% to spiritual matters, and dedicating a number of years as a missionary. While I have never been a religious missionary, I have spent nearly 10 years as a military missionary, a Marine Corps pilot in Vietnam serving my country. One important lesson I have learned from Tom and others of the Mormon faith is the saying, God does not need to receive, but humans need to give. This reminds me of the importance of being generous. It is my opinion that greed, rather than generosity, has taken over the world. Every time I meet someone who is short of money, or if I am short of money, I am reminded to be generous and to give what I would like to get. For example, if I want money, I need to give money. Having been out of money a number of times in my life, I have had to remind myself to give money at times when I needed money the most. Today, I make a point of donating regularly to charities and causes that are dear to my heart. My opinion is, if I cannot personally work at a cause near to my heart, then my money needs to work there for me. Going further, if I want kindness, then I need to give more kindness. If I want a smile, then I need to first give a smile. And if I want a punch in the mouth, then all I have to do is throw the first one. I asked my friend Tom Wheelwright to be a part of this book, not only because he is a smart accountant, a team player that anyone who wants to be rich needs to add to his or her team, but also because he comes from a generous and sound philosophical background. Tom is a smart CPA who is an advocate of investing in real estate. Why? Because he knows that tax laws reward real estate investors more than they reward stock investors. He is a great teacher, a generous man, and most importantly, a friend I respect. Robert Kiyosaki.
I was one of the fortunate few growing up. Unlike much of the rest of the world, people who have been told to save their pennies and invest in mutual funds, my parents taught me to invest in real estate and business. My father had a printing business, and my mother handled their real estate portfolio. So it was natural that once I had received my education, both formal and work-related, I opened my own business. I had a lot of education before I finally opened my own business, a master's degree in professional accounting, 13 years of experience with international accounting firms, as well as experience as the in-house tax advisor to a Fortune 1000 company. I was a little slow to realize the power of business. When I started my accounting firm, I did it like most people. I worked all hours of the day and rarely took a vacation. When I did take a vacation, I still took calls from clients and colleagues. After all, business never rests, so why should I? Several years into my business, we had experienced significant growth, but I was still working day and night and never taking a real vacation. And outside of my business, I had no substantial assets. That's when I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad and first met Robert Kiyosaki. He helped me realize that I was thinking about business all wrong. It was not about how hard I worked, but rather about how smart I worked. Like many of you, my first real experience with Robert was at a Rich Dad seminar. There I was, sitting next to my business partner, Ann Mathis, and her husband, Joe. Robert was talking about a subject near and dear to my heart, the tax benefits of real estate. Out of the blue, Robert asked me to come up to the front of the room to explain the tax benefits of depreciation, introducing me as his other accountant. I had come to learn about Robert Kiyosaki and Rich Dad only a few months earlier. One of my good friends, George Duck, had become the chief financial officer at Rich Dad and had introduced us. I'm not sure who was more nervous that first time I went on stage, Robert or me. Can you imagine putting an accountant on stage? Robert had no idea that I had spent my life teaching in one capacity or another, but he took the chance and put me up there anyway. This began a long and inspiring relationship between us, and it launched my journey toward financial freedom. I remember one of the first times Robert and I worked together. He used me as muscle. Robert had been asked by a reporter to give an interview for the business section of the Arizona Republic. The primary topic was how Robert could claim that he routinely received 40% returns on his investments. I went as the authoritative backup to Robert's ideas. Someone might not believe a marketing genius, that is, Robert, when he says he gets these levels of returns on his investments. But who wouldn't believe an accountant? When it comes to investing, numbers are everything, and who better to support the numbers than someone who spends his life documenting, reviewing, and analyzing them? That was one of the first opportunities I had to explain the benefits of the leverage that comes from real estate. Not long before, I had started my own real estate investing. You would think that with parents who are real estate investors, I would naturally become a real estate investor. I had even spent my career showing real estate investors and developers how to reduce their taxes. But I didn't actually begin investing in real estate until after the first time I played Robert's game, Cashflow 101. The game had a powerful impact on me. I saw the power of leverage in real estate with my own eyes. The game was so powerful that the next day after playing the game, I called one of my clients who had been investing in real estate for several years and asked him to meet with me to show me how I could begin my own real estate investing. And then I began making serious changes to my business. My partner, Anne, a systems genius, created the systems, policies, and procedures in our firm so we could focus on running the business and not working in the business. It took a few years, but eventually we were able to step away from working for hourly professional fees and instead supervising and growing a business that worked without us. Now I can take 3 weeks off each year with no email or phone access, whether it's spending time in Hawaii with my sweetheart or taking a trip to the Chateau region of northern France with my son. I don't have to worry about my accounting firm or my real estate investments while I'm gone because they both run without my daily attention. Tip: real estate investing is a business and should be run like a business. Robert talks a lot about the cash flow quadrant, with each labeled as E, S, B, and I. He emphasizes that we need to move out of the E, employee, and S, self-employed quadrants, and into the B, business, and I, investor quadrants. I take this one step further, that is, to move all I quadrant investing into the B quadrant. Think about what you could do with the time you would have if you didn't have to worry about tenants, repairs, and cash flow. How would it feel to eliminate the frustration that comes from constantly watching your real estate investments and worrying about a tenant calling you in the middle of the night with a problem? You can eliminate all of this stress and free up hundreds of hours of your time simply by running your real estate investments as a B quadrant business. It's really not that difficult. You simply have to start acting like a business and apply fundamental business principles to your real estate investing. Business principle number one, strategy. Every business should have a clear strategy. Your real estate investing business is no different. A strategy is simply a systematic plan of action designed to accomplish specific goals. There are 7 simple steps to creating a successful strategy. Step 1. Imagine. Begin your strategy with goals. Imagine where you would like your real estate investing to take you. It may be a white sand beach in the Caribbean, unlimited time with your family, or working for your favorite charity. My favorite places in the world are Hawaii, France, Arizona, and Park City, Utah. So my dream is to own a house in each of these locations. Don't be afraid of being too aggressive. These are your dreams, after all, not some number that is artificially imposed by a financial advisor. Our clients frequently have dreams of financial freedom in as few as 5 to 10 years. And with a good strategy in place, anyone can be financially free in less than 10 years if they just start by applying these few basic business principles to their real estate investing. I already have properties in Hawaii, Arizona, and Park City, Utah. France is next on the agenda for next year. Pretty aggressive goals, but I have been able to reach them in a very short time by applying basic business principles to my real estate and business. Step 2, financial goals. Determine what it will take to realize these dreams in terms of wealth and cash flow, and commit to a date for accomplishing this goal. Then write down what you currently have available in terms of investable assets, less the liabilities. This is your current wealth, also called net worth. Step 3, cash flow target. Of course, you will need to figure out the amount of wealth that it will take in order to create your desired cash flow. A simple rule of thumb for calculating this number is to multiply your desired cash flow by 20. For me, I figured that I need $20 million in order to create an after-tax cash flow of $1 million each year. Step 4. Current wealth. Once you have your dream firmly in mind, the next step is to identify where you are today. When considering where you are today, list only your real assets, that is, those that are available to invest. Don't list your car or your jewelry, but do list the amount of equity in your home if it can be made available for investing through a home equity loan. Assets can be liquid or long-term. You'll find examples of both types listed in the bonus PDF. These first four steps are the essence of a process referred to as dreamlining, and I will use a simple illustration to show you what I mean. When I first met Robert and started down my road to financial freedom, I had $1 million investable net worth on July 1st this year. I wanted a $250,000 cash flow, $5 million net worth by July 1st in 5 years. Step 5. Vision, mission, and values. After you have your dream line in place, you can make a plan to reach those dreams. This plan should include your vision, mission, and values, the type of real estate you will specialize in buying, and the criteria you use for choosing your real estate investments. At this point, you may be wondering if I have truly lost my mind. After all, aren't vision, mission, and value statements only for true businesses? Exactly. And your real estate investments are a true business. At least they should be, if you're going to reach your dreams in the shortest amount of time possible and with the least amount of work. When creating your vision, remember that this represents your focus for the future, that is, what you want your life to look like when everything is in place. Your mission is simply a statement of how you are going to go about your investing business. And your values are the values that you insist everyone you work with in real estate share with you. Here are my personal vision, mission, and values. Vision. My vision for financial freedom means having the time and resources to do what I want, when I want. I know I have reached financial freedom when I can travel anytime I desire, spend quality time with my family and friends, and serve through charities I enjoy. Mission. My mission to reach financial freedom is to invest in highly appreciating single-family homes by researching foreclosures, borrowing from banks and sellers, holding properties for 5 to 10 years, and obtaining tax leverage through depreciation. Values. My values are these. Abundance, recognizing that there are plenty of resources and real estate deals to go around. Caring, being kind and expressing gratitude. Learning, taking the time to grow and improve my real estate knowledge, and respect, treating others the way I want to be treated. Step 6. Investment niche. Once you have your vision, mission, and values in place, you can begin looking at what type of real estate makes sense for you. Every successful business owner knows that you are always most successful when you focus your attention on something you enjoy doing and for which you have a natural ability. At my company, ProVision, we have a variety of tools we use to help people figure out which type of real estate they will enjoy the most: multifamily, commercial, industrial, raw land, or single-family homes. My personal investment niche remains highly appreciating single-family homes. Step 7. Criteria. The final step in your strategy, determining your investment criteria, is something that few people take time to do. And yet, if you can determine your investment criteria as part of your strategy, you can avoid a lot of headache, stress, and wasted time. You can also avoid making costly mistakes, and you will save a considerable amount of time and energy, enabling you to focus on only those investments that meet your criteria. As an example, here are my personal investment criteria. Minimum appreciation, 10%. Minimum rate of return, 50%. Cash flow or cash-on-cash return, 0. Price range, $200,000 to $600,000. Maximum amount of investment per deal, $60,000. Maximum time commitment, 1 hour per month. Location of investment, Western United States. Price as a percentage of value, 85%. You may be asking why you need to spend so much time and effort developing a strategy. We teach our ProVision clients about the importance of strategy by playing Cashflow 101 with them in a very specific way. If you have played the game, you realize that, on average, it will take 2.5 hours. We instruct our clients that their team, the players at their table, must spend the first 30 minutes developing a strategy to win the game. This strategy includes the type of assets they will invest in and their criteria for investing. All members of their team, though playing as individuals, must follow the strategy precisely. The result is astonishing. Each player gets out of the rat race and wins the game in less than 2 hours. So even though they have spent an enormous percentage of their allotted time developing their strategy, roughly 20%, they finish substantially earlier than they would have without their strategy. This happens every time, so long as each team member adheres to the strategy. Business principle number 2, team. Just as every good business has a strategy, every successful business owner has a very carefully chosen team of individuals and companies to help him or her succeed. Your team will add considerable leverage to your investing. You can take advantage of your team members' time, talents, contacts, knowledge, and resources. Real life story. My team took care of it all. So how do I make time for real estate? You guessed it, I have a terrific team. They are so good, in fact, that the only time I have to spend is to quickly review reports, make decisions, which are pretty easy since I have a very well-defined investment criteria, and sign documents. I remember one time recently when I was speaking to my team leader, and he informed me that a tenant had vacated a house unexpectedly and not turned off the water. My team leader, who is not the property manager, drops by all of my houses on a regular basis and noticed that the tenant had left. He rushed into the house only to discover that the pipes had broken. This was in Utah in the dead of winter, and the house was flooded. The cost of repair was in the neighborhood of $50,000. My team leader immediately took action. After turning the water off, he called the property manager and the insurance agent. He arranged for the repair company to renovate the property, made sure the insurance accepted the claim before spending any money, and went after the property manager and tenant for any damages not paid for by the insurance company. I did not have to worry about a thing. And I probably spent only 30 minutes total dealing with this mess, signing authorizations and talking to my team leader. So here are my tips for building a team. Plan. Think carefully about what skills you need on your team. For example, you're going to need an attorney, an accountant, a banker, at least one property manager, and others. Decide on the skill sets you need before you decide on which people will fill those roles. Referrals. The best team members almost always come as a referral from someone you trust. But make sure the person referring is also a real estate investor and is knowledgeable about your situation and needs. A trusted advisor, such as an attorney, accountant, mentor, or wealth coach, can be a good source of referrals. Agreements. Make sure you have good, clear agreements in place with each of your team members so they know what is expected of them and what they can expect from you. Before we leave the concept of a team, let me give you my personal experience with developing a real estate team. Anyone who knows me realizes that I spend most of my day growing my business. This doesn't leave me much time for real estate investing, but I love real estate investing and understand completely the importance of it in my wealth strategy. I estimate the time I spend each week on real estate to be no more than 1 hour because of the great team I work with and by applying the other business principles we have talked about in this chapter. This brings me to our next principle, accounting. Business principle number 3, accounting. You may wonder if I include accounting as a basic principle of business because of my accounting background. While I have to admit to a natural bias in favor of good accounting, I believe that if you were to ask 100 successful business owners if good accounting, including good reporting, were critical to their business, at least 95 of them would agree. Why? Because good accounting leads to good reporting, and good reporting leads to good decisions. If you don't have the information you need, how are you going to make good decisions, such as when you should sell a piece of real estate, or how to know if your portfolio is producing the desired results? Great entrepreneurs understand the purpose of accounting. Here are a few of my personal keys to great accounting. Key number 1, purposeful accounting. Accounting should never be done solely to satisfy the IRS. Accounting's primary purpose should be to provide accurate and useful information so that you can make the best decisions. Poor investors think that the only reason to keep records is so their accountant can prepare their tax return at the end of the year. This is a huge mistake. Good accounting is critical to good decision-making. Without current, accurate numbers, how are you going to make the decision to buy, sell, or refinance your property? And how will you know which property is doing well and which is doing poorly? You won't even know if your property manager is doing a good job or not. Several years ago, Ann and I purchased a group of fourplexes in Mesa, Arizona. The price was good, based on the information we had at the time. We kept very close track of the cash flow and the income from these properties. But after a year or so, it became clear to us that these properties were not going to generate positive cash flow in the near future. At the same time, we noticed that cap rates, see principle number 4, were going down. So, based on our numbers, we sold the fourplexes. Because of the decrease in cap rates, we were able to make a significant profit, and we stopped losing money each month. Key number 2, accurate bookkeeping. While good accounting should go far beyond mere bookkeeping, it begins with accurate and appropriate bookkeeping entries. Accurate bookkeeping is the basis for creating useful reports and analysis. Bookkeeping is merely the process of entering the results of transactions into a record that can be used for reporting and analysis. My experience is that most people will save time and money by doing their own bookkeeping through online banking and a very simple accounting software program such as QuickBooks. Key number 2A, chart of accounts. Begin by setting up a chart of accounts. This is just a list of the accounts you're going to use to classify your receipts and expenditures. The accounts you use should be those that make the most sense to you. For example, one person may list printer paper as an office supply, while another may list it in the more general category of office expense. It's simply a matter of how detailed you want your reporting to be. Just remember that if you did not create an account for it, you cannot create a report for it. Tip. Here's a little trick for you. You don't have to create a separate chart of accounts for every property. Instead, you can create a class for each property. This allows you to do all of the bookkeeping for your real estate business in one QuickBooks company while creating the detail and report options that you need in order to understand what is happening with each property. If you need help setting up your chart of accounts, ask your accountant or CPA, a critical member of your team, to lend you a hand. This person should be happy to help and can do this fairly quickly for you. Key number 2B, detailed data entry. Once you have your chart of accounts set up, you are ready to begin entering your data. Remember that you need to enter the details of every transaction. Most transactions will have some cash involved, so if you enter the details every time you receive or spend money, you will catch 98% of your transactions. Some transactions don't have cash involved, such as recording depreciation expense. These are done through journal entries. Since you will likely have some journal entries to do, I will give you a brief explanation of how to do these. Understand that every transaction has two sides to it for accounting purposes, a debit side and a credit side. Think left and right, so the total of the left side always equals the total of the right side. Expenditures are always a debit to the expense, income, liability, or asset account, left side, and a credit to cash, right side. Receipts are always a credit to an income, expense, asset, or liability account, left side, and a debit to cash, right side. To increase an expense or an asset, you debit that account. And to increase income or a liability, you credit that account. Key number 2C, journal entries. When you enter a receipt or an expenditure into QuickBooks, the software automatically creates both the debit and the credit. But sometimes you will need to make a correction or adjustment to your books when there has not been a cash transaction. You do this with a journal entry. When you make a journal entry, you simply enter both a credit and a debit. Let's use our depreciation journal entry as an example. Since everyone has to make this journal entry at least once a year, debit to depreciation expense in the amount of depreciation calculated for the period, usually based on tables provided by the Internal Revenue Service or your accountant. See Chapter 7 of my Rich Dad Advisor book, Tax-Free Wealth, for more details about the magic of depreciation. Credit to accumulated depreciation in the same amount. This account is an offset to the asset account for the asset you are depreciating, such as a building. See? It's simple. Key number 3, consistency. Learn to use the correct accounts and use the same accounts for all similar receipts and expenditures. If you decide to put paper costs into office supplies, always put purchases of paper into office supplies. Don't put them into the office supply account one month and the office expense account the next month. Key number 4, frequency. Do your bookkeeping no less than once a week. Two problems happen when you get behind. First, it becomes overwhelming and you will continue putting it off until the end of the year when it becomes urgent for your tax returns. This creates the second problem. Not having up-to-date bookkeeping means you cannot get good reports to make good decisions. Key number 5, online banking. I do my bookkeeping every Friday morning. It takes me less than 1 hour because I use the systems that are available to me, such as online banking and automatic bill pay. QuickBooks will automatically classify all of my online banking to the right accounts with a few clicks of the mouse. I actually find it quicker to do the bookkeeping myself using these systems than if I were to use an outside bookkeeper. I tried that once and found it took me more time to correct the bookkeeping than if I just did it myself using online banking. The next principle I'm going to share with you is how to get good reports from your bookkeeping software. If you review these reports each month, you will be able to make good decisions about your real estate business quickly and effectively. Business principle number 4, reporting. All successful entrepreneurs understand the importance of managing their business by metrics. Metrics are simply measurements of the day-to-day results of the business. Sometimes these measurements are raw numbers, such as cash flow. Other times, they take the form of ratios. And still other times, these measurements are comparisons, either to a previous period, to targets, or industry averages. Tip: if you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. Report number 1, statement of cash flows. Let's start with the king of all raw numbers, cash flow. Unfortunately, it's rare that a real estate investor has a clear picture of his or her true cash flow. You should know the cash flow from each property, as well as the overall cash flow for your real estate business. There is a tendency among real estate investors to believe that all they need to know about cash flow is the difference in their bank account from the beginning of the month to the end of the month. But the real key to using cash flow as a tool is to understand where the cash came from and where it went. A standard accounting report that you can use to figure this out is the statement of cash flows. This report, though rarely used among real estate investors, is the most important report of all. It begins with operating income. Operating income includes rents minus normal cash expenses, including repairs, maintenance, and management fees. It then details non-operating items, such as financing transactions and investing transactions. Financing transactions include any money that flows to or from your business because of loans. These include your mortgage payments, as well as any loans you take out or money you put in. Investing transactions include any money that flows to or from your business because of investing activities. These include down payments on properties and cash from the sale of a property. The end result is the increase or decrease in the amount of cash you have at the end of the period, month, quarter, or year, compared to what you had at the beginning of the period. This report makes it clear how much of your positive or negative cash flow is coming from operations versus other activities, such as financing or investing. Wouldn't it be great to know this and be able to find out this information at any time? Here is an example of a statement of cash flows for one of my properties. I pulled this report directly from my QuickBooks. Property A, operating activities, net income, negative $6,706.40. Adjustments to reconcile net income to net cash provided by operations. Escrow accounts, negative $174.40. Security deposits, $800. Net cash provided by operating activities, negative $6,080.80. Investing activities. Accumulated depreciation, $6,790. Accumulated amortization, $18. Net cash provided by investing activities, $6,808. Financing activities. Mortgage payable, negative $258.34. Net cash provided by financing activities, negative $258.34. Net cash increase for period, $468.86. You can find this statement of cash flow in the bonus material. This report tells me several things about this property. First, it tells me there was positive cash flow. Second, it tells me that there was a loss for tax purposes. Net income was negative, producing additional cash flow for me through depreciation. Third, it tells me that I paid down my mortgage by $258, which is an additional benefit to me. If all I knew was that my cash had increased by $468 for the period, I would never have learned these other important benefits from this property and may have thought the property wasn't doing too well. Report number 2, ratio analysis. While raw numbers are helpful to know, serious analysis of your real estate business comes from ratios and comparisons. Here are the most common ratios used to analyze property results. Ratio, cap rate. Numerator, net operating income. Denominator, property value. Tells you how much the property is earning. Ratio, ROI. Numerator, annual increase in value plus income. Denominator, cash invested. Tells you total return. Ratio, cash on cash return. Numerator, net cash from investment after taxes. Denominator, cash invested, tells you cash return. Ratio, current ratio. Numerator, current assets. Denominator, current liabilities. Tells you ability to pay liabilities. Ratio, debt slash equity ratio. Numerator, total debt. Denominator, net equity. Tells you leverage. Ratio, return on assets. Numerator, net operating income. Denominator, total assets. Tells you profitability. Ratio, debt coverage. Numerator, net operating income. Denominator, annual debt service. Tells you ability to service debt from cash flow. Ratio, loan to value, LTV. Numerator, debt. Denominator, value of property. Tells you leverage. Ratio, internal rate of return, IRR. This is a complex formula that tells you average annual return on investment. Tip. Two of the most important ratios are the cap rate on your properties and your return on investment, ROI. Ratio number one, cap rate. Your cap rate, or capitalization rate, is simply your net operating income divided by the value of your property. Remember that this figure represents the value of the property, not the cost of the property. Let's look at an example. Suppose your property produces $10,000 per month in rent, or $120,000 for the year. And suppose your operating expenses, remember this doesn't include mortgage interest or principal payments or depreciation, are $70,000. This means that your net operating income, NOI, is $50,000. If your property is worth $500,000, then your cap rate is 10%. Tip. You can use this information to make decisions. Let's suppose that you have a loan on the property with a 5% interest rate. If your cap rate goes below 5%, then you need to think about selling the property. Why? Because now you have what is called negative leverage. Negative leverage occurs when your return is less than you are paying on your loan. At this point, it is actually costing you money to borrow because the cap rate is lower than your borrowing rate. When Ann and I sold our fourplexes in Mesa, the cap rate had dipped down around 5%. The interest rate on our mortgage was 6.5%, so we were now into negative leverage. On top of that, we had negative cash flow. So it was time to sell the properties. And we did so at a substantial profit because we watched the cap rate. When we purchased the properties, the cap rate was around 10%. Though our net operating income never increased, our property value doubled simply because of the cap rate decreasing from 10% to 5%. Ratio number two, ROI. Another ratio we review is return on investment, or ROI. This ratio tells us how a property is doing overall. It's critical to review this ratio on a regular basis. I know several investors who calculate expected ROI when buying a property, but never again. Like the cap rate, your ROI can tell you if you should be holding on to the property or if you need to do something different with the property. ROI is the ratio of the money you receive from the property annually divided by the amount of money you put into the property. For example, one of my criteria for investing is an after-tax ROI of at least 30%. This includes cash flow from the property and the appreciation on the property, plus my tax benefits from the property and principal reduction on my mortgage. A few years ago, I bought a property in Utah that looked like it would have an ROI of 35% over a 5-year period. But it turned out that the property was very difficult to rent, so the ROI was less than expected. Once it was clear the ROI was going to fall below my 30% requirement, I sold the property and found another property that better fit my investment criteria. It should be obvious to you by now that a lot depends on coming up with the appropriate investment criteria. Many of your decisions will be based on these. Working through your numbers and applying them to your criteria is where another member of your team, your wealth coach, will be critical. Everyone should have a coach for his or her business. Your coach should be someone well-versed in real estate and in overall wealth strategies. Go to www.provisionwealth.com/wealthstrategies.asp for more information on wealth coaching. Report number 3, comparison reports. The third type of reporting is comparison reporting. Comparison reports take the actual data from your real estate business and compare it to some other data, such as industry standards, past performance, or expected or budgeted performance. Let's suppose that when you bought your property, you expected that it would appreciate 10% per year. Suppose the actual appreciation is 15%. Your appreciation report should show you not only your current appreciation, but also your expected appreciation and perhaps the average appreciation in the market. This gives you a good idea of how you are doing compared to the market and to your own expectations, and whether you might want to consider buying more property in that market or selling what you have so you can buy other property that better meets your criteria. Can you see how important it is to have good reports? It's not just the raw data you want, it's also the ratios and the comparisons. One of my biggest complaints about many property managers is that they produce terrible reports. Typically, they give you only the raw data, and frequently even that is impossible to understand. Let me show you the type of report my property manager gives me. While it doesn't give me any analysis, at least it gives me the data in a way I can create my own analysis. I can see immediately that I have positive cash flow, which meets my criteria. I now need to take this information and put it into my reporting system, QuickBooks or something similar, and from that system, I can create reports that give me cap rates, ROI, and other analyses. Here's a real-life example of a good property report. Rent collected, $1,200. Less 8% management fee, $96. Expenses-HOA fee, $105. Amount to owner, $999. Mortgage payment, $987.90. March 2009 cash flow, $11.10. April 2009 projection, $999. Business principle number 5, taxes. If you want to make an immediate impact on the return on your real estate, you need to pay close attention to tax laws. Tip: the fastest way to increase your ROI on a property is to take advantage of the tax laws in place to encourage real estate investment. The single biggest expense for most people is taxes. In the United States, which is routinely considered to be a low-tax country, the average business owner earning $100,000 pays more than 50% of his earnings to the government in some form of taxes. These include income taxes, property taxes, transfer taxes, sales taxes, employment taxes, and excise taxes, not to mention estate taxes. Some ancient civilizations equated a 50% tax rate to being in bondage. Yet here we are in the 21st century paying more than 50% of our income in taxes and accepting this as okay. The good news is that if you are in business, and particularly if that business is real estate, you can easily lower this rate from 50% to 20 or 30%. In fact, many of our clients at Provision who are serious real estate investors legally pay no income tax at all. Think about what you could do with the extra money you would have if you reduced your income taxes by even 20 or 30%. How much more real estate could you buy? How much faster would your portfolio grow? I once calculated that someone in the 30% tax bracket could double his investment portfolio over 7 years simply by maximizing his tax benefits from real estate and reinvesting these savings in more real estate. When I tell people that they can legally reduce their income tax by 30% or more, they are immediately skeptical. They think I must be getting my clients into some tax shelter. They are correct. That tax shelter is real estate investing, and it doesn't matter whether it is residential, commercial, or industrial property. In the United States and many other countries, real estate is a highly favored investment under the tax laws. So let's talk about what you can do to receive the maximum tax benefit from your real estate. We will focus on the laws of the United States, but keep in mind that many other countries have similar laws. So even if you don't invest in the United States, these tax reduction principles may apply to your real estate investments in Canada, Europe, or other areas of the world. Here are 5 ways to reduce your income tax by 30% or more. Tip number 1. Tax strategy. A good tax strategy is like a good business strategy in many ways. You have to look at the big picture, including not only your real estate, but also any other businesses and investments you own. And you have to look at it from a long-term perspective. My personal tax strategy includes my 2 sons. One of my sons, Sam, enjoys business and wants to be involved in my business in the coming years. My other son, Max, has no interest in business and wants to write children's books. So my tax strategy keeps my son's interests in mind. They both own parts of my business, but I have to structure their ownership differently, since one is actively involved and the other is not. Your tax strategy needs to be a plan that you can readily accomplish without making life too complicated. Tip: a good tax strategist could really help here, so another team member for you is a tax advisor who specializes in tax strategies. Tip number 2, entity structure. Which type of entity should you use? Should you use a limited liability company, LLC, a corporation, or a partnership? Or should you avoid using an entity at all? In some countries where there is not a lot of litigation, you may not need a separate entity for your real estate. But in the United States, where 95% of lawsuits worldwide are filed, the proper entity is essential. Let's look at a quick overview of the tax entities available in the United States. While every person's situation is different, let me give you a few pointers about which entity you may want to consider for holding your real estate investments. From an asset protection standpoint, discussed in detail in another chapter of this book, LLCs are frequently the best entity to use. One of the great things about LLCs is that they don't have any tax consequence. You can elect to tax an LLC any way you want. An LLC can be treated as a sole proprietorship, a partnership, an S corporation, or a C corporation. For most real estate rental properties, you will want to be taxed either as a partnership or a sole proprietorship. Don't make the mistake of putting your real estate rentals into an S corporation or a C corporation. This could spell disaster if you ever have to take the property out of the corporation to refinance it. You will be taxed as if the corporation sold the property to you at its fair market value. I had someone in my office recently who owned his investment property in an S corporation. We estimated the tax cost of refinancing to be in the neighborhood of $250,000 simply because of the entity structure. If you are a real estate dealer or developer, you may want to consider S-corporation taxation. This includes those of you who want to fix and flip properties. The reason? You can significantly lower your Social Security taxes by owning your property in an S-corporation. And since you probably won't need to distribute the property out of the company, except when you sell it, you won't have the bad income tax consequences I spoke of earlier. Tip number 3, travel, meals, and entertainment.